Support comes from Ohio University's Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service, a proud member of Ohio University's Health Collaborative, with the Heritage College of Osteopathic Medicine and the College of Health Sciences and Professions. We are partnering with local providers and communities to improve public health. Information is available at ohio.edu/Voinovich-school.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jazzed About Work, where we talk about everything that might have an impact on your career. I'm your host, Bev Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. And today, we're talking about something that might impact your work life or could be important in many other ways. Our focus is the confusing legal jargon that can pop up whether you're trying to buy a property, get out of a jam, or just understand what's happening in the news. Our two guests are great friends of Jazzed About Work and their WOUB colleagues. Sometimes known as the Judicial Twins, they are Judge Tom Hodson and Judge Gail Williams Byers. Both are retired from the bench, and yet they are very active in matters related to our legal system. And they've just launched a new podcast that's all about decoding the complex legal concepts that bounce up in ordinary life. It's called Next Witness, Please. They'll tell us about the podcast and why it's important to take some of the mystery out of our legal framework. Judge Gail and Judge Tom, I am so glad to have you back. I'm glad to have each of you back, but it's wonderful to have you here together to talk about your new podcast. I think you're really doing something that's important, kind of decoding all of the confusion around the whole legal system. But before we get into that, and kind of by way of introduction, if people haven't heard you before, I want to comment that you're both judges who are no longer on the bench, but you seem to take the role of judges as more of a mission than a job, and you're still very active in looking at the legal system and commenting and helping and supporting and teaching. So by way of introducing you, I wonder if each of you would tell us a little bit about what you've been doing, how you've stayed in touch with the legal system since you left the bench. So Gail, why don't we start with, I should call you Judge Gail when we're here, shouldn't
absolutely I? Absolutely not. Absolutely. But I thank you anyways. But the fact of the matter is I think that's one of the wonderful things about Tom and I is, notwithstanding our time on the bench, I would venture to say, and I hope Tom would agree with me when I say this, neither of us have to check our driver's licenses to remember our first name. I don't think either of us kind of struggle with that black rope syndrome, because after a while, when you've done it so long, your first name kind of becomes Judge and everybody else forgets, like, if you actually had a legal name that the government refers to you by, but it's perfectly fine. But at the same time, you've said something so important, which is that even though neither of us are on the bench anymore, we find that the work that we've done, either we are addicted to punishment because of all of the work that we did when we were on the bench, or we're deeply committed to public service such that we just can't truly detach from it. But I think it is so important, or both, which also gives really good reason to stay connected to our therapists, right? So, but I think it's so important, maybe even now more than ever before, that we, I think, recommit ourselves to the work that we've done on the bench and now off the bench. And for me, I spend the greater part of my time teaching and educating judges nationally and sometimes even internationally with the work that I do at the National Judicial College as a judicial fellow. And so I like to consider myself kind of bench adjacent. Right. So not on the bench, but like right next to it, because I think the work that I do in that regard is so very important to helping ensure that we have an independent judiciary that's also learned and is constantly evolving and staying in touch with what's happening in today's world. At the same time, I think everybody agrees that courtrooms are full of folks who have absolutely no idea what goes on inside them. And that's largely the litigants and the folks that come through courts for one reason or another, which is what makes this podcast a wonderful complement to the educational work that I do with judges, because I'm able to work with an extraordinary partner in Judge Tom in educating the public about what happens in court cases and what happens when you end up in court, such that, listen, we're going to redefine this whole idea of jailhouse lawyer. We're going to have a whole bunch of street lawyers by the time it is over, because everybody, hopefully by the time it's over, is going to feel like they can walk into a courtroom and be really at least aware and able to navigate the proceedings because they have some idea that's more than just basic or tangential, but some idea of what's going to happen and what they can expect next, what they can ask for, what certain things mean. And we've been able to use important cases that are happening right now to do that. And I think that's good work. I think, and it's fun work as well. Would you agree, Judge Tom?
Yeah, I would. And I think part of what Gail and I both do, Bev, is to educate. After I left the bench full time, my education sort of took two prongs. One was I spent many, many, many years traveling the country and internationally teaching judges how to talk with news media and how to deal with reporters and how to try to educate the public through their public comments. And then the second prong of that was that I taught as an adjunct instructor at Ohio University in the School of Journalism and tried to teach young, you know, fledgling reporters, student journalists, how to cover courts. So both of those were a mission I had after leaving the bench full time. Then I went on the back on the bench part time as a visiting judge and a visiting acting judge, and I sort of curbed some of that, some of my teaching, because I didn't want it to interfere with the appearance of any appearance of impropriety on my part. But after I left that a year ago, the mission really loomed large for me that we needed to do some public education. Gail and I both agree that people don't trust what they don't understand. And lawyers and journalists and judges have done a pretty poor job in demystifying the legal system so that people can understand it. So in times where we have political discord and political divisions, it leaks over into the courts, especially when people don't understand the functioning of the courts and how they're to work. So that was what came to me as what we needed to do. And of course, I reached out to my partner in crime, Judge Gail, and she was all over it. And we thought, okay, now we can do this. We can formulate a podcast that's timely because people are interested in some of the Trump cases, but we're not totally Trump cases. But people are interested in that. So we can use that as a vehicle to start to educate people. And then we'll go beyond that to other cases and other situations and other things. But, you know, the time was right to do this. And it's necessary to do this. And not anybody else was doing this. There are pundits, there are analysts, there are people keeping score on who's winning or who's losing what day of what trial, but nobody is explaining it in plain English, in plain examples that people can relate to, but us.
Well, here I've got a question. And, you know, I am a retired lawyer, so I've thought about this in a variety of contexts. Why is it that it is so difficult to understand fairly common activities in the law? Why is the jargon, why is the way things are described so far removed from everyday English? Does it have to be that way? What do you think? Why don't we start with you, Tom, since you've been trying to teach students?
No, it doesn't have to be that way. Much of our language, much of our judicial language comes from British common law, and so it's sometimes sort of stilted and hard to understand. But I think that almost everything in the law can be brought back to an example that people can relate to in their own lives and put themselves in a particular situation, and then that brings about understanding. You know, so if we have to not only translate the language, but we have to then provide examples that people can relate to. That's our mission. It's really twofold in that regard. Would you agree, Gail?
Absolutely. And I think one other thing I would say, and maybe this is the cynic in me, right? To when it comes to thinking about why the law is for many so difficult to understand, and then for others really easy to translate. And the fact of the matter is if it were so easily understood and easily navigable, why would you need specially trained lawyers? Why would you need law schools? Why would you need law degrees? So I think there's, again, that's the cynic in me. So there's, of course, a market for that highly specialized individual who's trained in that area. But also, as you said, you know, Tom, I think the law is not only born out of that very colonial British experience, but there's a lot of it that is Latin, that is Greek. And remember, the law is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of centuries of years old that we've adopted. And we do this and we bring this system in, bring it to bear for individuals who have no context for it at all. They just know that they're commanded to show up in a room where there's a person that's there that is certainly seen as highly important. They are physically seated higher than everyone else in the room. They are usually donning a black robe. And everyone kind of snaps to attention when the person appears and at the pronouncement of their statements. That's what people understand for the most part. And that's what they're responding to. Quite frankly, most people are just absolutely petrified to be in a courtroom. They are anxiety riddle. And it doesn't matter if you're speaking in English, Greek, Latin, Swahili, all of it sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher when the only thing you're thinking about is how do I get on the other side of those doors and get out of this room because I don't want to be here in the first place. None of it not only makes sense, but they can't even, many times folks can't even process it because the anxiety just takes over their brains. It's that reptilian part of the brain. It just takes over and it is that fight or flight, right? So what they'd like more than anything is to flee as opposed to fighting the people in the courtroom. And so it doesn't really matter what language is born out of, the anxiety takes over.
So just think about things.
Just one more thing. Just think about this, that one wise judge, when I was a very young judge, said, if you're trying to explain the judicial system to somebody, always hearken back to the medical system, because every person and every family has had involvement with the medical system, whether it's their general practitioner, whether it's the emergency room, whether it's major surgery, a major illness, whatever. People have that in their lives. Not everybody. In fact, extreme minority of people have the legal system in their life. So there's no basis for them to understand. Not only is it confusing and baffling, but they have no context. And when they are involved in it, like Gail said, they just want to get the hell out.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of fear in the courtroom and around anything that's even vaguely related to the legal system. Like I said, I'm a lawyer, but anytime I get an envelope and it says IRS on the outside, I think, what did I do wrong?
I'm
always afraid
court.
I made a mistake.
Right. What happened?
We came home from the to our farmhouse one time, and there was a sheriff's car parked in the in front of our house. The house is pretty remote, and we said, "Oh, I wonder what's the matter." We have no reason at all to be afraid of the sheriff's office. They're great. We got out of the car. We were very nervous. Andy went up, and it turns out that some juror had become sick, and they needed an immediate somebody else to step into the a jury the next morning. And Andy was called. So this was at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. But they couldn't have been nicer. But we laughed at how. Why are we so afraid? But I think it's partly the consequences, of course, you know, what could happen. But it's partly the lack of confidence in our ability to communicate. And I think one of the things you both did in the courtroom was try to talk to people in plain English and explain that. So that's sort of what the podcast is doing now, isn't it? Explaining things in plain English.
Oh, absolutely.
That's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to break down terminology. We're trying to break down process. We're trying to break down procedure and put it in context that people can understand and relate to. I mean, I did that in the courtroom. I know Gail did it in the courtroom, but we're expanding it. I've got one quick funny, and that was, I had this witness on the stand, very nervous, not very well educated. And the attorney who was questioning this witness asked the witness 5 times, "Where do you reside?" And the witness didn't know. And so I finally had to jump in and said, "I think what the attorney wants is, where do you live?" "Oh, that's what they want. Okay." Then gave the answer. But that's just one quick example.
The power of plain English.
You have to interpret for people. You can't talk above them, or they're not going to function well.
That is absolutely the power of plain English. But while you said that, one thing I do think we try to accomplish, in addition to decoding and distilling and demystifying the court system for our listeners on the podcast, is we do try to sprinkle in a little humor. And I promise you, it will not escape me about your neighborhood, Bev's, your neighborhood's door-to-door campaign for alternate jurors the next time Tom and I talk, because I have just never heard of such outreach. But I think that it is absolutely amazing. But it also speaks to what many people see when they think about the justice system, right, is that overlay or underlay or interplay between law enforcement and the court, and that connectedness. You know, the sheriffs are only showing up because the judge dispatched them to my home. And that may or may not be the case. There may be some other elected official, like a clerk, that says, "Okay, here are the alternates. And okay, sheriff's department, you got to go out and you got to find some alternates because the judge is insisting that the trial must go on and we will not suspend it." And so that may be independent, but in the minds of most people, there's not a lot of daylight between law enforcement, the judge, the prosecutor, the defense attorney. In some people's minds, everybody's kind of, you know, common bedfellows. And the beauty of doing this experience with Tom is that although we both served as judges on the bench, we brought to the bench two fairly different experiences as practicing lawyers, with Tom having spent a considerable amount of his career as a defense attorney and I as a prosecutor, we're also able to crystallize for those who listen the different perspectives and sometimes even the strategy behind some of the decisions that are made from the perspective of either the prosecution or the defense, and sometimes what they're thinking and why those decisions are made. And of course, disclaimer, we haven't spoken to these folks directly, so we're not speaking directly or intimately to their decision making. But when we were similarly situated, we could understand why some of these things would happen or what you could expect. And so that regular, average, common folk can appreciate that things aren't just happening in a vacuum. There's no fairy dust really being sprinkled, but that these are real strategic moves and that there's some strategy behind it. There's some thinking behind it that might help them understand and appreciate how the interplay between all of these players in a courtroom are actually working out and why that makes sense in this instance. Now, it doesn't mean that'll be the case in every instance, but explaining and using a case that's happening right now to kind of explain sort of the step-by-step and the beauty of using the case that we've used, the Trump trials, as kind of a basis is because there's so much activity. There's so many motions being filed. There's so many things that are happening. And this isn't like your regular garden variety case. I think Tom would agree. I rarely had cases where there was just this much, that it was so much going on at once. Everything from gag orders to pretrial motions, motions in limine, arguments, and the like. Rarely did you have all of that happening, maybe in a series of cases, but not in any one case. So, I mean, when I tell you they brought the fireworks, they came with the fireworks and a couple extra matches at that, because this really does give an opportunity to teach and to educate the public from a lot of different vantage points.
How did you come up with the name of your podcast?
Well, we played around with a lot of different names, and I Googled every single one of them, and we didn't want one that everybody else had or that another podcast had. I had that happen to me when I started podcasting back in 2016. I started a podcast called Spectrum, and it wasn't 6 months after I called it that Time Warner changed their name to Spectrum. And I think that I've lost some listeners as a result. But, we did a Google search. We talked back and forth, but we wanted something that sounded like it came from the bench and that it had a degree of respect to it, which we think that judges instill in a process.
So the and please. So
a judge would always say, next witness, please. And so it's part of what a judge would say in a trial. And if I can just hearken back, it's one other thing that Gail said is we do the strategy from – she does the prosecution strategy. I do the defense strategy. We share secrets on how we used to communicate with juries and tricks that we did. That's to give people an inside look at this process, that it's not an exact science, that you have come up with plan A and plan B, and there are strategies behind what you do. Then we flip and talk about the judicial strategy. What are judges looking for in this process? What are the judicial responsibilities in this process? So we hit all sides of a case. Prosecution, defense, and judicial. And I think that's what makes us different and makes us unique.
There's something else you're doing in there. I know just from the way you generally talk to people and explain things and make it accessible. In the olden days, when we were young, there were civics classes, and you kind of learned about some of these things in school. It was part of what every citizen was taught. And now there's very little education on how the legal system or governance or how the three branches of government work together. There's not a lot of sophistication or even simple understanding about our systems. Would you agree with that?
I'll jump in and I'll say I absolutely agree. I think with the change in curriculum or the many changes that especially public school curriculum have undergone over the last several years, we don't see as much of a commitment to civics, to government, to the functioning of government, like we did perhaps, I would say 10, 15, 20 or so years ago. Many educators, I think, would agree that they have kind of changed their focus to ensure that they're teaching so that their students are successful when taking standardized tests. And that doesn't necessarily include a focus on, again, the very government that governs or controls their lives from day to day. I think that is unfortunate. It is terribly unfortunate for a number of reasons. First of all, there's not one among us, I don't think, who would agree that we can regenerate ourselves. We can't. So that means we're going to be relying on these future generations to ensure that democracy continues. And that's in every corner of society, including and especially in government. So this next generation, these are going to be everything from our school board members to city council members to mayors, but also members of Congress. These are going to be our next batch of judges, whether it's local, whether it's state, whether it's federal. These are going to be the ones to whom we pass the baton and encourage and expect to carry on this thing we call democracy, although we perhaps have not done and are not doing the very best that we can to educate them early on and even to inspire them, because that's where kids get inspiration from. Is they don't necessarily get it once they've already left the nest and they've ventured off to college or started their career. A lot of that inspiration starts early. And I think we're missing a really good opportunity to infuse our kids with the wonderment, the excitement, and even, yes, the important obligation to public service very early on by telling them we need you. And democracy is a contact sport. It means you got to tag into the game. And we are going to need our young people. And here, this is coming from somebody who shamelessly colors their hair so that I can still at least be invited to be, I don't know, a chaperone at prom. So
I don't.
We need young people to tap into the game so that they can continue this. But when they haven't learned about, you know, these processes, and I'm not suggesting that, hey, y'all go out there and pick up your first traffic ticket or your first infraction so you can get in the court and figure out how the process works. I'm not suggesting that at all. What I am saying is that, hey, listen, you've just heard Tom and I are retired, so we're not on the bench anymore. That means it leaves somebody to have to take that seat once we're gone. And we have to have young people that are interested and committed to public service and know enough in order to do right by it. Because this isn't the kind of job you really want folks learning once they get there. You want them to know a little bit of something before they get there, lest it works poorly for all of us.
K through 12 has done I think a really bad job over the last couple of decades of teaching government and civics and just how the American governmental system works, the three branches of government. It's something that retired and now deceased Justice Sandra Day O'Connor took on as one of her things after she left the bench. It was an obsession with her to try to get more curricula out there on these very, very topics. But it's not just a K through 12 issue. It's the people who have graduated from the K through 12 issue and now go to the universities. They don't have context either. I see this in young reporters, young student reporters. they may get a story about a case or about a situation, a legal situation. They may get it accurate as to the facts, but they don't have any context to give it a contextual basis. So you only get half the story. And this is truly bothersome. We've been lucky with Next Witness Please, Beverly, to be invited in July. We're going to be guests on a podcast called Teaching Matters, where we're going to be talking about our podcast and hopefully encouraging teachers to take up, if not a whole series of episodes, to look at our archives and pick certain episodes that they can play for their class and bring things into context for people. So one of our missions is to not only educate the general public, but help to fill that K through 12 civics and governmental void.
Well, it's a big mission. I'm so glad you're taking it up. I know that something you bring to the table here for your listeners is that your conversations, I'm sure, are going to be clear and entertaining, as well as important, because we need to be able to enjoy talking about these issues and have a sense of how it all comes together and feel connected with it. And I know that's how the two of you are going to present the information you have. I hope you have a great time with it.
We part of our advertising promotion is that we do not give stodgy lectures. You know, we don't want people to see this and see what we're doing, think, oh, God, I want to listen to an hour of this.
This is exactly why I didn't spend six figures on a law degree.
No. You know, we're conversational. We're back and forth. We laugh. We don't take ourselves too seriously. That's the whole point. You know, it's not to make this fun and games, but it's to make it accessible. And you can only make it accessible if people out there listening to us see us as human and people with senses of humor and people who have made mistakes, and we share some of the mistakes that we've made along the way. That makes it accessible to people.
Well, I'm looking forward to listening to you. I appreciate you being here today. I hope that people will find you, and you're on all the big platforms, including NPR.
I was going to say it's Next Witness, Please. It's produced in association with WOUB Public Media. Colin Cameron is our audio producer and audio supervisor, and also one of our co-producers. And he's a young man that gives us a young perspective on what we're doing and feedback. But we're available at all the major podcasts, but specifically Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and we're on the NPR podcast directory.
And if I can say one more thing, Beth, one way that we are able to know that we are actually providing value to folks out there is when you sort of give us some feedback. So we not only invite you to listen to our podcast, but if you'll please rate and review us and ask us questions. We do have an ability for you to send in questions to Judge Tom, and we'll actually take those into consideration so that we can answer them for you and make sure that, again, this becomes kind of a conversation, if you will, with our listeners. But we ask that when you are listening, please rate and review us so we can have some idea of how well we are doing and the benefit we're providing to you.
That's always a good request on podcasts where we want to get people engaged. Thank you for being here, both of you. I'm sure it's going to be interesting series, and I'm looking forward to seeing where you're going to take this.
It's going to be fun, and thank you for having us. It's really nice to talk about these things.
Absolutely grateful to be here, especially with the both of you. I don't know that I've ever had a conversation with both of you, Tom and Beverly, at the same time. So this has been fun by itself, but we're really grateful that you sat down and you talked to us about Next Witness, Please.
Today, we've been talking with Judge Gail Williams-Byers and Judge Tom Hodson about Decoding the Law. This podcast is produced by WOUB Public Media. Colin Cameron is our audio engineer. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. And our sponsor is the Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service at Ohio University. Today's tip is that if you find a legal process to be confusing, don't despair. A starting point is to go online and find one of the many sites that explain the meaning of common legal phrases. When you know the definition of keywords, the situation might be easier to understand. Thanks for listening, and if you enjoyed today's show, please come back soon.